Hi, this is Barry Liss at INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. You're listening to a special newsmaker edition of Science at Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. Operations research was born during World War II, and the military has been a bastion of ops research, as it's called, ever since. In today's segment, we talk with Admiral Mike Mullen, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Admiral Mullen earned a master's degree in OR from the Naval Postgraduate School. We'll be discussing the role of OR in his career in the armed services. We'll also explore lessons that the military can teach the business world about using math modeling and analytics. I'm joined in today's segment by Peter Horner, editor of the INFORMS publications, ORMS Today and Analytics. Mr. Chairman, welcome to the Science of Better.
Good to be with you, Barry.
Those of us who write about the ops research field are sometimes frightened we could break our brains doing all that hard math. How did you come to study operations research?
Well, actually, I was inclined towards math in my undergraduate time. And I had always done fairly well in it. So I was in math and engineering, and yet it was 15 years between when I graduated from the Naval Academy and went to the postgraduate school. So I hadn't cracked a book in 15 years.
That's hard.
Went over all the math I'd ever seen in my life in the first 6 weeks of prep training, if you will, even before the curriculum started, and started from there. But what I found about the curriculum there and what I really did enjoy about it was the application of it, the pragmatic side of it. Not every problem I solved or attempted to solve or missed on an exam was practical, but a lot of them were. And so what I was attracted to was the underpinning of the what I would call applied math in operations research, the modeling and simulation. I was a systems engineer major at the Naval Academy.
So very similar.
So the ability to both integrate, approach it from a system standpoint, and underpin it with high-level mathematics, which obviously it was. So in that regard, I was attracted to it, and it didn't fall short in terms of meeting what I thought it might do.
During the Cold War, when you were doing your graduate work, ops research was used extensively in force-on-force analysis. We're wondering, what are the areas where ops researchers are making the greatest contribution to our nation's defense today?
Well, I think, I mean, clearly that was in the mid-80s, and I did some of that force-on-force analysis even in my own thesis. And what I've watched evolve over time is areas that, from my perspective, beg for the kind of operations research capability that's out there in terms of emerging warfare areas. A friend of mine proffered the idea not too long ago of something called universal situational awareness. Now, ops research started in the underwater sound world during World War II. And in the underwater sound world, the anti-submarine warfare world, we're hunting submarines. You're trying to figure out where to insonify, how to detect, but oftentimes there are, they relatively speaking, are pinpoint solutions, as opposed to a big thought now called universal situational awareness, where we understand the environment completely and really look for disturbances. So from my perspective, the world, the operations research world, and the problem set has gone from much broader force-on-force analysis to much more specific, I think pretty well-defined problems, although very, very difficult. And I just use that as an example. So where will the disturbance take place in the field, whether it's under the water, on the land, in the air, in space, and then what do we do about it? We don't have systems. We don't have enough money to be able to create universal situational awareness with sensors. It's just the world's too big, space is too big. And an area that is really emerging in warfighting is space and cyberspace. So I would translate, you know, the Cold War force-on-force piece into the kind of both digitized world that moves so rapidly and moves us into areas to try to solve problems that seem almost intractable or insoluble at this point in cyberspace, in space, and even in the kind of warfare that we find ourselves in, which isn't very often force on force anymore.
Pete?
Thanks, Barry. Admiral, it's an honor to meet you.
Good to see you, Pete.
And even better, it's an opportunity, a wonderful opportunity to discuss two of our favorite subjects. That would be the military and operations research. Just following up a little bit on Barry's questions, how did your OR education at NPS contribute to and help shape your career as a naval officer? And how does your OR background continue to serve you now as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff?
Well, maybe I'll take the second part first, which is how does it help me now? One of the things that the graduate education in OR taught me was how to think much more critically than I had before, and really to frame a problem. And where that really helps me in this job is being able to still frame a problem in my mind and to look at it differently than many people who bring those problems to me. And then I have an opportunity to ask the right questions or try to ask the right questions, which oftentimes those that bring me products haven't thought of. I don't try to do that, but it's become a pretty natural part of how I do business. And so the ability to frame a problem, and this is the systems engineering, the applied math, that I try to bound a problem and then ask hard questions that get to, that would push the system in a direction of an answer that clearly wasn't forthcoming by the time it got to me. And I can apply this to, I can apply to the areas I already talked about, but I can apply it to just about every single difficult challenge, including policy challenges that we have. What's our policy long-term going to be with respect to, how do I think about policy with respect to China and the warfighting pieces that are a part of that? How do I think about it in my dealings with non-government organizations, and I'm doing that much more routinely? How do I think about it when I'm dealing with the challenges that I see for USAID, part of our government that is re-energized now under new leadership and also as we all are and need to be resource constrained. So where, at my level, decisions are oftentimes about apportioning resources. Where is the best, and to use an OR term, where's the optimum place to apply your resources? And we need to do that. We've had increasing budgets for almost the last decade. Those days are over, and we need to be able to think more critically, prioritize, and optimize in ways that we haven't been forced to do, and analyze as well in ways we just haven't been forced to do in the last 10 years because we've had plenty of resources. And we need resources to fight these wars, but they've also surfaced a whole different set of problems that we hadn't thought about before these wars started.
My, that's really stayed with you, and we're glad to hear that, needless to say. We have a large contingent of military personnel and members of INFORMS. Not to go back, but how did it impact your career, your OR? And you moved up quickly and rapidly and well?
Well, it was less. I mean, I actually got in very senior. I was a commander, I was very anxious to get a master's degree. And in fact, I was advised by my assignment officer. I was specifically advised against taking the tour in Monterey because it would end my career. Well, he didn't quite have that right.
So we noticed.
Yeah. But it was also a tour, quite frankly, for my family. I had two little kids. We were both from California. So there was a family side of this, which is an important part of all of our careers as well. What didn't happen after that is I thought for sure I would be assigned back here in Washington, because I'd never been to Washington, even though I'd been in the Navy almost 15 years by the time, or actually almost 17 years by the time I got out of, was done at Monterey, and that too would, not coming to Washington would be detrimental. And I guess the advice I have with respect to that is that we know ourselves pretty well. We certainly have to take the advice of those who would assign us, but we also have some pretty good instincts about ourselves. And from that standpoint, it's worked very well. Because I was so senior, I was a commander in 05, with 17 years in the Navy, and I went from there to command at sea. When I, typically in the Navy anyway, you do what we call a payback tour. Well, I didn't really have to do that. And yet, the 2 years of study, because it's a hard curriculum. as you know better than I. It's a hard area to do well in, but it really disciplined me and it gave me an ability to again, think as I've described before, but and then practically apply it down the road. And I'm a fairly pragmatic guy. It isn't like I don't like theory, but in the end, I'm a pretty pragmatic guy. The other thing that it taught me in Monterey was I didn't want a PhD in it. I didn't want to know that much about any subject. People need to do that, and I have great admiration for it. But for my own practical application, a master's was where I wanted to be.
Before I turn it back to Barry, one more question on my side here. As you know, OR is built on a foundation of mathematical modeling and fact-based, data-driven decision-making. Yet presidents inevitably, and perhaps have to, take at least in consideration the political ramifications of their crucial decisions.
Sure.
In your position as chairman, how do you reconcile these two very different decision-making processes?
Well, I stay out of the politics, for sure. And again, part of it is my background, but I'm not unique in this regard, is all of us. I mean, I see senior military officers all the time trying to make recommendations and come to their positions in so doing by understanding what the facts are. Not all of them, including myself, would do extensive modeling and simulation, although I push pretty hard in this job specifically to look at wargaming. And I don't mean just wargaming, the military against military kind of thing, but in a very tough situation, how do we wargame out several steps into what policy might look like if we adopt a certain policy? Underpinning it, I think, with good models, good data, I think that is something we have to do more and more of so that the best decisions can be made. Then my recommendation goes forward based on that, and then the president has to make it. That's when he's the head politician in the country. That's where hit politics kicks in, and I feel very comfortable with that apolitical, best military advice approach, and then the politics kicks in. I understand this is a political town. I do.
Yes, it is.
I do understand that, but I work very hard to not let the politics in any way, shape, or form affect my recommendations to the president.
Thank you, Barry.
Turning to the influence of operations research in the military on the other sectors, I was a little surprised to see that you were on the cover of Fast Company. We expect you to be on the cover of the Daily Paper. Are there lessons that ops researchers in the military can teach the private world?
I'm sure there are. I mean, another very brief period of time in my life, I went to something called the Advanced Management Program up at Harvard, and it was an 11-week executive course focused on business. I was fascinated with this in terms of how business looks at various problems, and I also found there to be a lot more overlap in problem solving than I had realized. That said, many business leaders I met, and this was almost 20 years ago now, but many business leaders I met then were also very focused on fact-based, data-driven solutions. So I would offer, although they didn't talk much about operations research, I would offer that there is plenty of opportunity on the business side for the kinds of things that operations research gets at. They aren't simple, but easily transferable skills or areas would be in the whole logistics world, the whole supply chain piece, which, quite frankly, many businesses have done better than the military. So it's almost like learning in the other direction, mm-hmm. but clearly the operations research skills and techniques would apply there and would apply, again, in the optimization world. I don't know that there is and I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but there is an area of study that focuses more on optimization than ops research, or can,
sure.
if you apply it correctly. And business leaders I've talked to, they want optimum solutions specifically. Now, they get into very specifically the whole P&L, the bottom line piece. Our bottom line in the military is different, but we both have bottom lines. And so I think there is a great deal that could be used specifically from the military perspective to, in the business world, if we knew more about each other. I mean, one of the reasons I pay attention to what's going on in business and economies is because in the end, security or a lack of security is in great part driven by healthy economies or lack thereof. I'm in places I'm fighting in places for the last several years where the economies weren't very healthy. I'm worried about instability in places where the economy isn't very healthy. So where we have that, which is one of the reasons I try to pay attention to the economy, where we have that, usually I'm not as involved from a military standpoint, and that's a good thing. I guess my overall thought would be is we need to share a lot more than we do, because I think there is a lot of overlap and a lot where we could help each other, and this is but one area, again, because I feel so comfortable and so strong about what operations research can do to underpin good decisions, which business leaders want to make just as well as military leaders want to make. It's very, very applicable.
Pete, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Thanks, Barry. The military has been asked to take on more and more non-combat missions, as you know, such as disaster relief, infrastructure building, training police. How will these types of missions transform force structure to what some people are now calling resource structure going forward? And do you see a role for OR in that transformation?
Well, if I were to go back to that, probably the signature event that really got my attention in the last several years was the tsunami in 2004. I was actually stationed overseas in Italy on the other side of the world when that occurred. But I marveled at that time at the ability of the United States, and in particular the United States Navy and Marine Corps, to be able to build a city at sea where there was no infrastructure in a devastated country that had where the infrastructure was wiped out. And in building that city, be able to provide food and water and medical and help bridge to a stabilized situation that was stable enough for the country to take care, to basically pick up in that humanitarian assistance and disaster relief role. I would then extend that to even our own country the following year when Katrina hit in July of 2005, and what we were able to do on the military, both, and it was all the services. It was, as it oftentimes is, recently in Haiti would be an example, led by the Coast Guard that punches way above its weight, but it was all the services in Katrina that came together in a very joint way. We're very good at organizing. We're very good at what we call command and control. We're very good in terms of providing structure, presence, and then extended recently to Haiti, where all services went down there very rapidly, again, led by the Coast Guard, but all the services provided a huge boost and a presence. So as I think about the problem, this is really a systems problem. It's a flow problem. It's a prioritization problem. So we were in Haiti, just to give an example. There's one airstrip in Haiti. There were 20 sorties a day. We needed to, and eventually got the number of sorties per day upwards of 140, 150, 160 in a very small airport. That's an optimization problem, and it's a constrained problem. I haven't mentioned one of my favorite subjects, which is linear and nonlinear programming. But those, I mean, I can remember, even though it was the mid-80s, I can remember the practicality of the problems that linear and nonlinear programming, the optimization issue, the constraints issue, which any major problem like disaster relief or humanitarian assistance has, you could apply that very specifically. I actually brought up and wanted to know in the Gulf oil, the leak that we have right now, which has been such a disaster, is are we, because the military, particularly the Navy, has some incredible computing power, are we modeling this out? Are we using the kinds of power that we have in our technology to be able to understand where this is going to flow, how long it's going to last? Have we done that kind of modeling and simulation work, which I think operations research brings as well?
We only have time for one or two more questions, okay. And there is one that rises to the top. We're wondering whether there's a place for ops research and programs like the Wounded Warrior Program.
I would say, just sort of back to what I was talking about right now, the most important part of the Wounded Warrior Program and extending that to veterans and what they've been through is how they return to society. And these are great young men and women with life experiences that are very rich and very rare, that are returning to communities throughout the country, and who will, by virtue of a very robust new GI Bill, most likely go back to school. So there would be an opportunity for young students to find out what operations research is all about, or certainly at the undergraduate level, understand that as a math and science engineering major as at an undergraduate level, there's a place to go here where they can solve real problems for the military or on the civilian side. They are young people who want to serve, and they have extraordinary potential, but they also have extraordinary needs. And what I'm finding in communities throughout the country is communities don't understand, we are not very good at this point of aligning the needs with those who want to help. And fundamentally, we need to do that, I think, throughout the country. As these tens and hundreds of thousands of veterans return to communities throughout the country, they want to serve, they'll make a difference. So optimizing that right now is a real difficult problem, and it's going to be different. It's constrained. It's going to be different. It's different in Memphis than it is in Oakland, California, per se. So there are local leadership challenges across a very complex array of needs and potential that need to be joined up. I mean, that's one thought very specifically. And then the other is that these young men and women are going to contribute for a long time. They are going to be looking for both education and employment. So how to match up employment opportunities with their background and do it as rapidly as possible. Investing in this now is, while to some it might seem expensive, it is a pittance compared to the return on investment you'll get from these young people over the next 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Most of them are in their 20s, and they're going to live a long time, and they're going to really make a difference.
Can I just, I know we're running out of time, I just had one question. A report issued earlier this year by Major General Michael Flynn drew a great deal of attention, and it included in that report, it maintained that senior leaders from the president on down, and I'm quoting here, are not getting the right information to make decisions. You're certainly one of those top leaders. What's your view of this, and are you getting the intel information that you need?
General Flynn's a senior intel officer for our forces in Afghanistan. He also was my J2 here before he went, so I know him well, and I agree with him completely. In 1997, I deployed to the Persian Gulf with my carrier battle group, and I was assigned to liaison with a British aircraft carrier that was out there at the same time. There were four carriers in the Gulf at the time, and this was just prior to what could have been war in Iraq in that time frame, late 97, early 98. And I walked into the Command Information Center, CIC, on this carrier, the British carrier, and there was this scope in the middle. And the scope in the middle, written in what was pencil, said, "This is knowledge." So whatever information was on that scope was fact. And if I were to talk about, and I've talked about this a lot over the years, for many of us in many different fields, the intelligence and information field being a huge part of it, I need the right information, the right knowledge. I don't need information. I got tons of it. I need knowledge at the right time. So how do I, and then go into what we're talking about, how do I optimize flowing the right information to a decision maker? And it varies if you're a captain in the trenches out there in a village in Afghanistan. The information you need is different, obviously significantly different from the information I need. How do I have systems which support that pour through this glut of information that's out there to get the president and that captain in the trenches the right information at the right time? And I would call it knowledge, not information. And the phenomena that has changed in warfare because of these wars is the ability to feed that information and intelligence into operations, conduct in operations, generate more intelligence and information, and feed it in very much an integrated, rapid way that outpaces the enemy. So when I think of what Flynn laid out there, that's how I think about the problem.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Admiral Mike Mullen, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Mr. Chairman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Barry.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.